Hey folks, a couple of quick announcements. First, Jim and I have a whole series of talks about the rides that Disney never built over at disneydish.bandcamp.com. Most of the shows are almost an hour long, and they cover everything from Animal Kingdom's Beastly Kingdom rides, to the inbuilt Muppet restaurant, to the floating theme park on an aircraft carrier idea. Man, the drugs were better back in the 90s, am I right? Anyway, check those out at disneydish.bandcamp.com. Second, big news, Jim and I are doing a live event in Walt Disney World in 2017. The dates are November 10th to the 13th, 2017, and we'll be putting more information at our travel partner's website, storybookdestinations.com/Disney Dish. We plan to spend those couple of days walking through the parks and telling stories, and that's pretty much how we plan to spend our evenings too, except at a bar. We're hoping Pandora's open then too, and we plan to have lots of stories about that. Visit storybookdestinations.com/Disney Dish to join us. And now, on with the show.
Welcome back to another edition of the Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. Weather's starting to get cold. I mean, here in Orlando, it's about 80. And that all means only one thing. This is our second show for December 2016. Let's bring in the man that they call Mr. Claus. I'm Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
80? It's 80 there?
It's going to get down to 65 tomorrow, Jim. So let's...
Oh. Okay, I've already shoveled twice. It's not even winter yet, officially. Life is not fair.
It's been beautiful. Today it was, I think I went out to walk the dog at like 7:30, and it was a crisp 60 or 65 degrees. And I was like, you need a jacket, man. It's true what they say, man. Your blood gets thinner when you live in Florida.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I remember coming back up to New England the first time after living down there for a while. And yeah, you suddenly realize you're no longer packing ragu. It's that weak, thin Florida blood.
that's exactly what it is.
You put on a sweater to open the refrigerator.
Yeah, I go outside at night now, and I'm like, yeah, do I need a jacket or not? What do you mean, do I need a jacket? I should be wearing shorts. All right, Jim, so let's talk about our topic for the day, which is the nighttime shows that I've seen while I've been here.
This is the Len Trips the Light Fantastic edition.
It is. That's going to be the title of the episode. So I've seen the drone show at Disney Springs, and Jim, I've seen Rivers of Light.
We have to save Rivers.
Okay, we'll save Rivers of Light for the last thing. All right, so the drone show at Disney Springs is actually pretty fantastic for the small thing that it is.
Well, it's interesting you say small. With the show drone technology, they have a 5-minute-long performance window because I guess that's as much power between taking off from the launch area, getting in show position, and then returning to base. I mean, there's only so much energy you can pack into a show drone.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. So it's it may even be shorter than that. Maybe like 4.5 minutes once you clip off the announcements at the beginning and the end. But the best place to stand to watch the drones is right behind Bongos, which is the only time I will ever recommend going near Bongos in Disney Springs. There's actually a nice walkway that they've built now to watch that. And there were a few hundred people there. It was definitely something that people knew to come out for as a special event. But the other place you could see it is if you were on the backside of Saratoga Springs. So if you were at Saratoga Springs looking over at Bongos, you would see it as well. It starts off with just a couple of drones in the sky simulating stars, and then gradually the lights turn on in them. By the way, every one of them has multicolor lights. It's not like some of them have green lights and some of them have red lights and some of them have blue lights. They've all got light-changing technology on them. So a couple of them start off as lights, and then they all sort of get brighter. And this being a holiday show, they go through a series of holiday-themed shapes. So in one, they form sort of an inverted ice cream cone, and the color is green. So it's in the shape of a Christmas tree, but it's three-dimensional. So it's not like it's a flat 2D thing. It's a three-dimensional cone shape of drones, which is great, but then they start moving. So it rotates. And that's, I think, the real power of the drones, is that there's this three-dimensional precision that you can get with the drones that you can't get with fireworks. Like, this tree rotated, and it looked like the lights on a Christmas tree were rotating. And again, they had 300 drones. And by the way, 300 drones look good. Jim, if they ever did, like, and I'm making up a number here, 1,000 drones, it would be like pixel resolution on a monitor. It would just be fantastic.
You have the advantage. You've seen this from the ground. I've went out and viewed a couple of the videos. And what's funny to me is that when you listen to the crowd watching the show, when there's a shape they can immediately identify, like the Christmas tree, there's a lot of noise. There's the hoo-ah. Same thing with when they close out the show with the Dove of Peace. But at the same time, you know, there's a number of moments in the show where they're just sort of shapes in the sky.
Yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, like blue and white shapes. And it's like, this is a more abstract pattern than I am used to. But still interesting stuff, yeah.
You know, sort of a holiday Rorschach test. You know, just sort of like...
I was going to go with Mark Rothko painting, but yeah, or Jackson Pollock. But yeah, your thing works too.
Okay. Sure.
So the drones are obviously coordinated through some sort of GPS system that's on board each drone. And at the beginning, when they were doing this green cone-shaped Christmas tree thing, one drone's GPS was clearly off a little bit because in the perfect cone of green lights, one drone was like 50 feet out to the left of all the other drones. But Jim, when it rotated in perfect synchronization with all the other drones just 50 feet off. I'm like, this is, you can tell it's the GPS thing. It was fantastic though. But I really like the shapes were crystal clear. Also, I think we talked about this in an earlier show. I was concerned that you might be able to hear all of the drone motors. You can't hear anything. It's absolutely fine. It was really, really good. I really liked the show a lot. Got a lot of, you know, applause, some genuine enthusiasm on it. I think as a prototype for other shows, it's proved its point. It's definitely conceptually there. Like, if they wanted to use this in Illuminations, if they wanted to use this in some other show, you know, this is it. By the way, are drones the reason why they held off on the Illumination show? Because there's been a refresh of that that's been in the can for like a year, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. This is basically the proof of concept. When they originally opened the show, the introduction to Starbright Holidays was pretty verbose. I mean, it was like...
longer than the show itself?
Well, it's just it represents the first steps in an all-new experience featuring cutting-edge technology. And now it's just like, you know, welcome to Disney Springs and Starbright Holidays and Intel collaboration. Now join us and look to the stars. Don't think about what you're looking at. Just enjoy it. These things have to be, 100 feet away from all guest areas, and they have to enter the park through... going back and forth from their base of operations, they have to pass over an area that doesn't involve guests, or the guests are shielded from. So that gets a little problematic in Epcot, but they are looking into it. In fact, what they're potentially looking at is the drones for Epcot would leave the old field where the ultralights used to land for Epcot's old character ultralight show from the early 80s. And they'd actually stop traffic on Buena Vista Drive to create a safe space for them to enter the park. And then they'd zoom to the backstage and they'd actually open the drawbridge that separates China.
Oh, is that where they would come down through the drawbridge?
They have to come in through an area where there are not guests. One of the reasons they've been holding off on the Epcot show is the thing we talked about at the very start, that it's like... when you only have 5 minutes of performance time, and how much of that is eaten up from, okay, everything's off the ground, everything checks.
Launch to get it. Yeah, and you got to get, I mean, you got to get, getting 300 drones in position takes a few minutes, right?
It does. Yeah. And the other aspect, frankly, that the pushback, you know, for example, Characters in Flight, the balloon there. I mean, how many times have you been over to Disney Springs and seen the sign that basically says that we're not flying right now because the wind's too high or there's weather in the area?
Yeah, and the Characters in Flight had to be down during the drone show as well.
Well, there you go. So that's another impact here, that you can't be advertising this as, oh, you have to come out and see the drone show and have people show up at 7 or 8:30 to catch it. And like, I'm sorry that due to weather-related reasons, we couldn't run it.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with Illuminations. Even in weather, a version of it can run.
Yeah.
And the danger of building your whole show around a technology that may not be able to take off due to weather is problematic for people in entertainment. Yeah.
I definitely see how adding in, though, drones into something that includes fireworks would be that much more. So if you had, you know, fireworks, if you had laser and projection technology like you would for Illuminations, or like the next version of Illuminations is supposed to have, you know, it would be that extra special thing that no other show has. I thought that an alternate flight route for the drones was coming in over the Odyssey restaurant.
There was, but the problem is, again, you have to do the exact same thing. You have to clear, you would have to clear a chunk.
Oh, so you can't just like build like a tent or something for guests to walk through, because if the drones are flying directionally towards the guests, even if one of them veers off the path, they could, okay. So it's not that they're going to drop from the sky. It's that they could slide into the guests as well from the sky.
There we go. There we go.
Oh, yes. And they got to build a wall, and then it's all complicated. Okay,
so
all right.
Nobody's built a park yet where they've thought, you know, well, we need to create a way for the drones to get safely in and out of the park. You know, just it's something they're working on. But again, first things first, they had to get this show up out of the ground and find out, okay, is it worth further investment? How did people react? And
the interesting thing about the show, too, is, you know, I've been watching the Intel drone technology for a couple of years. And the show that they're doing at Disney Springs is pretty much the Intel show, the show that Intel has been working on in Europe for a long time. There aren't very many. In fact, I don't think there are any Disney elements of it at all. It's not like they're making the Mickey Mouse shape or anything like that.
And the irony is that this whole project got underway in 2010 after Tangled was released, and creative entertainment at the park is, I want to do that. I want to do that scene.
You
want to
do
Tangled.
The lanterns.
You want to do lanterns, the lanterns. Yeah. Wouldn't it be fun to be able to use this as a component of a fireworks show? And it's like, well, that was the plan, you know, just to suddenly be able to play that music and have the lanterns rise up around the castle.
Well, I can definitely see that. In fact, you know, for some of these shows, I mean, you could, I don't know how big the drones are, but you could put them on a barge, like a fireworks barge. Mm-hmm. And launch them that way, too. That might be another option. And that would get around the extra airtime that you need
this is
to get
true.
Them in
and
place. Yeah. But still, I mean, but Illumination is still a 20-minute show, and you've got 5 minutes of battery. So, and it's not like they're going to bring the drones into land, you know, in the middle of a show when they're not being used and then fire them up again when they are. It's really got to be, you know, one part of one act of a show that the drones are used.
Remember the days when portable phone was roughly the size of a cinder block? In 5 years, we may be in an entirely different space and, you know, just send a barge out that's covered with drones. They come out, they do their bit in the show, they return to the barge, and it just speeds off. I mean, that's entirely doable, just not with this version of the technology.
Right. So we're looking for things like the next generation of drones with carbon fiber bodies and better battery life and, you know, more dense batteries and whatnot. All right, so Jim, you mentioned the lantern scene from Frozen. If there was one thing, Jim, that needed that scene more than anything else in Walt Disney World, it's Rivers of Light. Let's talk about Rivers of Light.
Well, first of all, I mean, congratulations to you. There have only been 4 performances of this thing so far.
And I saw mine with Bob Iger.
I love that. They did the first 2 shows, tail end of November, and then...
Yeah, December 5th and 6th, yeah.
A friend who got into an earlier version of the show explained that they were given like these hard tickets to get into the park ahead of time.
I was actually in the park. I went to dinner at Tiffin's. By the way, I saw several fans of the show were at Tiffin's, and I some of them even got to taste some of our appetizers because I ordered a bunch and we shared.
if you needed
an additional reason to listen to the show, Jim, it's that if we were ever find ourselves all in the park together, I would be happy to give you half of my appetizers. So that's one reason to go. But yeah, Tiffin's was fantastic. I am continually amazed by that place. If it was in a resort, it would be, you know, something that would be booked every single night. As it was, I made a same-day reservation for 6 o'clock.
Enjoy that till...
That date isn't publicly available, Jim.
Never mind. Yeah,
that was the thing that we know that we're not supposed to say. So we do that, and then there's a hard ticket that you have to get into the show, and security was tight the entire way through. They multiple checkpoints. It was like trying to get out of Casablanca during World War II. You had to have your traveling papers with you every step of the way, going from Tiffin's. Once you got past like the exit area of Discovery Island, before you even got on the bridge to Asia, so there were 2 seating sections, Asia and Dinoland. We were in the Asia section. Before you even got there, there was a cast member who said, you have to have your tickets to get in the line. And there was a line that, you know, that went in. When you got across the bridge in Asia, there was another checkpoint. Then when you got over by Expedition Everest, there was another checkpoint. Then when you went in, there was another checkpoint. And at each step, they said, the equivalent of, if we see you so much as fondling your phone in your pocket, we're going to kick you out. So no recording of any kind. They said it 6 or 7 times before the show. We got there early enough. I actually sat right up front in first row of the Asia section. Bob Iger and team were sort of like to my left and up a little bit. So there's a couple of interesting things that they do. There are some really good things in the show. Let's start with the first one. In the pre-show, you actually see some of the floats get into place. So like the big lotus flower floats take a good 5 or 10 minutes to get into place. And they kind of like, I can't tell whether they float around randomly or whether they're trying to synchronize their GPS settings and get set. But they were floating around there for a while. But as they were doing that, you're looking across the river at the landscaping around Flame Tree Barbecue and then the bridge over, you know, Asia and the landscaping of Asia. And there are trees and bushes. You know what it's like, right?
Yeah.
The first thing you notice is as dusk sets in, it starts to get dark. You see lights flickering in the trees, and it's supposed to be fireflies. And at first, it's just a few that you can barely see. But as the night gets darker, the lights intensify, and you can see that it's lots of fireflies. And the effect is just great. But then, every once in a while, you'll see a shadow move on the trees. And the shadows get more and more refined until you see that it's an elephant or a lion or a tiger. And then they start bringing in the sound effects with them as well. So as you see the lion shadow move along the landscape, and again, it's just a shadow projected on the trees, you hear the lion. And it's really great. So you've got some soft, area-appropriate background music. You've got the shadows. You've got the fireflies. And the first thing I said is, they should be doing this right now, regardless of whether Rivers of Light runs or not, because you can see it as you're going between Asia and Dinoland in the park, and it adds so much to the ambiance of the area. Even without the show, they should be doing it. It's a great effect. So lights dim at 8:30, and cast members come down, and they're carrying these elaborate lanterns, but it's not one lantern. It's like a series of lanterns, almost like suspended on a hook. And then other cast members have single lanterns. But the lanterns are constructed in sort of like a segmented way. And remember the old Tapestry of Nations, Tapestry of Dreams maquettes, the puppets from the old Epcot?
Yeah.
We all started singing the Hey, na. We all started singing the Tapestry of Nations song as they were walking down. Totally not the effect that the show designers wanted, but that's what it was. Mm-hmm. So they come down, and then there's this audio that says something about shamans, and the shamans are going to summon the spirits, whatever. It didn't make a whole lot of sense at the time, and I think this is actually one of the problems with the show, is that the shamans don't make sense. But the shamans come out, and they're on these boats, and they're definitely Asian-style boats, and they use puppets to make shadow shapes on the sails of their boats. So if you can imagine that the edges of the boats have powerful lights that are shining on the shamans, and then against the sails, the shamans are making shapes like monkey shapes and lion shapes and whatnot. And the idea of the show apparently is that the shamans are going to be summoning the animal spirits in a great celebration of nature. The lotuses come out, and here's where you see that the show is lacking some elements. Remember, the original version of the show was supposed to have 100 smaller floating lanterns, and they're not there. They're not part of the show. So this is one of the things that they deleted from the show. So this is, must have been where they were having the technical difficulties, that they couldn't get the GPS coordination right of this 100 lanterns, so they just cut them from the show. The problem with that is there are only 4 floats to look at then, for at least for the first part of the show, and it's not enough. The show begins. They fire up the water screen technology, which is essentially like a fan, like you have a fan that you used to fan your face with, those folding fans that women used to carry around. It's that sort of half circle shape. And the water screens start in the back of the lagoon, and the shaman boats sort of go to the side. The lotus floats sort of take center stage, and what they are is they're like water fountains in the middle of them, and they're projecting water up into different shapes, almost like a small version of the fountains at Bellagio in Las Vegas. Like that. So there's music, the fountains are moving, you start to see some animal shapes and video being projected onto the water screens, and that's pretty much the entire rest of the show, is various combinations of floating lanterns shooting water out, different colored lasers, and then different video projections. And I think that's literally the problem with the show, Jim, is that there's not much there in terms of content.
This is 5 years in development, 3 years in between construction and farming the floats out and sourcing the technology, and it just, only now when you get it in this space do you realize that you don't really have a show.
Yeah, and you said this before it even debuted, after the first delay, you're like, you know, I'm hearing that there are show problems. Jim, the reason why they're not showing this isn't technical. It's show problems. There are a couple of wow moments in the show. I'll give them this. There's the one scene where the animal floats first come out, and it's a great bit of stagecraft. Right before the animal floats come out, your eyes are fixated. They draw all 4 of the lotus water projection floats to sort of the center of the lagoon, and your eyes are focused exclusively on that. And it does this, you know, twirling thing where it's shooting off water in different shapes. But then the entire stage goes dark, and then these huge, brilliantly colored animal shapes appear in the area between Dino Land and Asia, and that little waterway that's the access point into the lagoon. And it's so well done, because it's like you're focused straight ahead, it goes dark, really bright thing out of the corner of your eye. It's just the way that the entry is done is just fantastic. They should keep that. That part works really well. There's another part about, I think, at the third act, where they're doing water projection, but the water projection follows, they're using lasers in combination with the water, and the water takes on the color of the lasers. Mm-hmm. It is really, really, really clear, like these blue columns of water and these orange columns of water are just super, super clear, very colorful. They do that well. But the rest of the show is just, like, I still don't understand what the shamans are supposed to be doing. And I say this, I wrote a blog post on this, and I said it like this. It's like, are we celebrating nature? Are we there to conserve nature? Have we just taken hallucinogenic drugs, and this is our cleansing ceremony? What's the purpose of the shamans? I didn't get that part of it.
The shamans were supposed to be controlling everything in the arena. So, you know, there were going to be these moments where they would gesture to a group of lanterns that would then go off and form a pattern or dance around their boats or, you know...
So the interesting thing is they kept the motion of the shamans doing that, but they're not motioning to anything now.
No.
Oh, that would make way more sense. Because, yeah, there are these periods where the shaman boats are floating in front of you, like they're intentionally moving somewhere, and there's this open space between you, the audience, and the shamans on the boat, but there's nothing there. Yeah. And so they're gesturing here, and... Like, I couldn't figure out, you know, is this a dance? Is this puppetry where the mechanisms aren't working right? So they left the motions in
Well, because, again, they still hope to bring the lanterns into the show.
Okay, that makes way more sense, because there were several times in the show where we're like, what are the shamans doing and why? And it didn't make any sense. But if they're there controlling the different shapes of the floating lanterns that aren't currently part of the show. Okay, that makes total sense then. That would make more sense anyway. I'd have to see it.
Iger saw the show, as you said, on the evening of the 6th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was there. I saw him, yeah.
Yeah, the word that's come down is that he agrees with an audience it does play better than just in an empty stadium.
That was an audience of cast members, though, who are predisposed to liking it.
And so he's like, it's like, look, there's some lovely elements, but it's still not ready. So the current plan seems to be these will be the last presentations to cast members, because obviously we're heading into the holiday season. Right now you have to concentrate on that. What the creative team would like to do is use this 3 or 4 week layover to get the lanterns introduced into the show. You were the first audience to get the fire and laser effect off of the lotuses, right?
We got the fire effect, but it was really, really, really subdued. Not that I want to promote my own barbecuing abilities, but I've made bigger fires at home. You almost wondered whether that was actually working right as well. And I understand that they're not going to do... I mean, it's not going to be, you know, a diehard kind of fireball effect because of the, you know, animals or anything, but I expected more out of that.
The current plan is, come January, a few more performances for cast members, that sort of thing. The creative team has been telling management at the park that they think they can get the show open in time for February.
I don't see how, Jim. The other thing I didn't mention... Mm. I don't think the soundtrack is all that good. I mean,
that was the next issue I was about to bring up. While they're telling the management of the park, February, the hard reality now is it's like, look, we may have to redo the score, and if we have to redo the score, that means we have to redo the programming of the animation. So it's really starting to look like what we're honestly talking about here, between introducing the lanterns and possibly swapping out the score and re-choreographing the boats, is an April, May open to the public?
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking early summer would be the soundtrack. You know, I love the Illumination soundtrack, but if you look at the story, I still don't understand the story. Mm-hmm. And I say that as someone, like, I don't think there's actually a plot or a narrative of the story. And I say that as someone who loves Illumination, like the most abstract thing that Disney's ever put in a theme park. But I couldn't follow this, and I think the soundtrack is way too generic. for what it is. I said in my blog post that it's like they asked a computer to blend together every Disney nighttime spectacular ever and then add words about nature. The other thing, too, and this is the thing that they've got to worry about, too, the water screen technology isn't dialed in yet. There were a couple of instances where they did a really great job on it. Like this, remember the water screens are in a half circle fan shape. And there was this one instance where they show a peacock spreading its feathers, and it fits exactly within that shape. That was brilliant. It was clear. It was crisp. You understood what they were trying to do. But even the slightest wind that night caused the images to become not focused and blurry. And the problem with that is when you're projecting abstract shapes or when you're projecting shapes on it, there are instances where you can't, like we couldn't tell, is this a lion? Is this orange blob that we're looking at, right? Is it a lion? Is it a meerkat? What is this thing that we're looking at? And we couldn't tell. It was just a really light wind. And we could also feel, by the way, the water coming back on us. So it'll be interesting if they do launch this in February. Mm-hmm. It'll be the glaze of ice on people coming out of it might be interesting to see.
In hindsight, they thought they were going to be able to build on the experience of World of Color and Fantasmic.
I actually said it reminded me of the World of Color debut where everyone froze during the...
Because
that was miserable.
Oh, no, absolutely. But if you think about Paradise Bay at Disney's California Adventure, that's not a waterway that you have fish and turtles. It's really sort of a closed, highly filtered body of water, and they can't do that in this park.
The river in the Rivers of Light is an actual waterway with plants and debris and living things in it, right?
And that has been a real challenge with the water screens.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's the water quality, the color of the water.
Yeah.
Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah, well, sadly, neither did the people who were putting it in the show.
Yeah, because in comparison, the water in Paradise Pier in DCA is practically drinkable, right? I mean, it's clear, this is not. This is like a dark, sludgy green.
If you think about the Rivers of America at Disneyland, where they do Fantasmic, the way they get away with it there is there were actually three smaller screens that, you know, you can do higher pressure with. Realizing now going with the one big, large screen in, you know, a body of water that has plant life and animal matter.
Organic matter is what the kids call it, Jim.
There we go. This is an issue. And it just,
I didn't even think of that.
The other problem right now, where one of the reasons why they're telling park management February is because park management wants to have, by the time Avatar opens this summer, at some date that we did not reveal earlier in the show, that they want to have load and unload for this nighttime show for Rivers of Light down. The absolute terror scenario for Disney is that Pandora, the world of Avatar, and, you know, Rivers of Light both open within too short a window, because suddenly you're dealing with all these people who are trying to get into the bioluminescent aspect of Pandora at night.
Yeah, and that's going to be, I mean, maybe 10,000 people will be able to fit in that area. If you're 5,000 on the attractions, 5,000 walking around, maybe 7,500 walking around. But there's only, what, like 3,000 seats? 5,000 seats at Rivers of Light? So you're talking about less than a third of the park's capacity. We'll be able to do things. And the setup for the show, Jim, for Rivers of Light, takes so long. I mean, they're going to have to, if they do one show at 8, the next one will be at 10.
Yeah.
Which they could do. I mean,
circling back on the drone show, they're supposedly talking already with Intel about, well, could we do a summertime program? Let's go away with the information that we have from this show and maybe come back and do a nighttime program during the summer. And the folks from Intel were like, okay, so get us your times for when the sun goes down and it gets dark enough to present the show. And it's like,
yeah,
wow.
That's easy enough to get. I mean, we have that actually built into the site.
But much like doing a fireworks show at 9 on a night where the sun really hasn't gone down is...
Yeah.
And especially with the drone technology, it's kind of unforgiving.
Yeah. And you don't want to actually see the drone mechanism. You don't want to see the body of the drone. You just want to see the light.
No.
So during, you know, in the middle of June, you know, it's not going to... It'll be dusky at 9 p.m. And that's the problem, right? Because you've got kids and you don't want to tell parents with small children, well, you've got to be awake until 10:30 to see the first show. Yeah,
I get it. You know, with Rivers of Light, you can be loading your show at 8:30, 9, and launch it at 9:30.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. at the same time, it just then...
When's your second show going to be 11:30? I mean...
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, okay. that's Ooh. Another reason why they really wanted this thing up, running for as long as possible ahead yeah. of Pandora, because they just, they wanted to have this down, and okay, we don't have to worry about that half of the park, we just have to worry about this half of the park. And now it's like now the it's nightmare like scenario. Yeah.
There are a few good elements of the show, but I would say at this point, it's maybe like a third of where it needs to, a third of the way towards where it needs to be. I mean, the soundtrack is really just, I've listened to some bad soundtracks from Disney, but this is not, the problem with it is it's just not memorable. All right, we'll see what happens. If we're down next month, we can both go see and see if they do previews. I would not expect to see this before late spring, though. It's just, I think that it needs way more work than that. And the last thing they want to do is introduce a show that's been delayed almost a year and have it be bad. I mean, that would be the worst possible scenario.
I know, but at the same time, the people who are talking about the Zootopia and or Moana follow-up show are like, well, you know, that's really unfortunate.
Moana 2 comes out when?
There you go.
Because we could be ready for that. All right, folks. Well, you've been listening to another edition of the Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. We are produced fabulously, I might add, by one Aaron Adams. Please go on to iTunes and Stitcher and rate our show and tell us what you would like to hear next. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care.